Good afternoon, Judge. I'm Donna Norman with the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Chairman Angelides is also on the phone this morning, along with George Wall from the FCIC
and Kirsten Downey, also from the FCIC.
And as I mentioned earlier, our General Counsel, Gary Cohen, may join us shortly. We're here in Washington, D.C., conducting a telephonic interview with Judge Michael Mukasey, who served as the U.S. Attorney General from November 2007 to January 2009, and we're very pleased to have your permission to conduct this interview. Judge Mukasey, with your consent, we're tape recording your interview this afternoon, and if you could consent to that on the tape recorder, we'd be much obliged.
I do consent.
Thank you.
And if we could just get a copy at some point, that would be great.
Absolutely. Sure. We should be able to email it to you probably in the next few days, if that's acceptable.
No problem. Thank you.
Judge, would you please state and spell your name just for our recording?
Sure. Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, middle initial B for boy, Mukasey, M-U-K-A-S-E-Y.
And if your partner would announce his presence for the recording as well?
Andrew Ceresny, C-E-R-E-S-N-E-Y, from Devon Boys in Plimpton.
Thank you. And if any additional people join you during the course of this interview, of course that's fine, but if they would state their names and affiliations as they join, we would again be much obliged.
We're not expecting anyone.
Okay. And if anyone joins us, we will also announce their presence, of course. Judge, the FCIC was established by statute and signed into law by President last year. It is a bipartisan, and it consists of 10 commissioners, and as I mentioned, the Chair, Angelides, is with us this afternoon. It's charged with examining the causes of the financial crisis and the collapse or near collapse of major domestic financial institutions. The Commission is charged with composing a report of its findings to the President and Congress by December 15, 2010. And again, we appreciate your help in this matter. A few housekeeping items. If a question is unclear this morning, please just request clarification and we'll be happy to do so. And please respond audibly for the tape recorder, which is unable to pick up your gestures or nods. Today we're going to focus on mortgage fraud and its role in the current financial crisis. We're going to focus mainly upon your tenure as Attorney General of the United States. However, we would also like your broader views on mortgage fraud and the financial crisis as appropriate. And with that, we'll jump right in. In September 2004, FBI Assistant Director Christopher Swecker warned of an epidemic of mortgage fraud that, if not aggressively prosecuted, could lead to a financial crisis comparable to the S&L crisis. He gave these warnings during a CNN interview. When did you first become aware of these or similar warnings that an epidemic in mortgage fraud could have a great effect on the economy?
I did not become aware of that particular CNN interview at all, either before my service or until now after it. I became aware of mortgage fraud as a phenomenon at some point after I assumed office, and I can't, as of right now, give you a precise date.
Okay, and we'll come back to when you became Attorney General in a moment.
That was November of 2007.
Thank you. Assistant Director Swecker's warnings were followed in October 2004 by congressional testimony seeking increased resources to vote additional FBI agents to investigate and prosecute mortgage fraud. Were you aware that additional resources for mortgage fraud had been requested in 2004?
In 2004, no.
Okay.
I took office in November of 2007.
Okay.
In 2004, I was a district judge in the Southern District of New York.
Thank you. And do you think when you became Attorney General at that point, do you think there were adequate FBI resources devoted to mortgage fraud?
Adequate is a... it's not a loaded word, but it's kind of an odd word. There were never adequate resources, if you mean enough, devoted to any phenomenon while I was Attorney General, and that's perpetually the problem of anybody in government. You allocate the resources that you have between and among the various responsibilities that you have, and try to do it as best you can. That's what's involved in making choices. So was it, quote, adequate, unquote? Not in that sense, no.
Okay. And when you...
I think the resources that the FBI did have and allocate were intelligently allocated in the sense that they were organized into regional groups within 2008 to investigate mortgage fraud regionally in cooperation with U.S. attorney's offices as well as state and local prosecutors so that they could leverage their enforcement capability. But that was the way the resources were allocated, is my understanding.
Given that you think there was, given that you were comfortable with the allocation of resources, did you believe in particular that mortgage fraud should have more resources, that you should go to Congress or elsewhere and ask for additional resources? Let me phrase it that way.
The Justice Department asked for additional resources every time we had a hearing before the congressional committee that was charged with deciding on our budget, and we asked for additional resources across the board. We did not ring the bell and go and ask for additional resources with regard to mortgage fraud any more than we did with regard to gang violence at the southwest border or terrorism or any other of the matters that we were charged with investigating and pursuing.
Donna, can I ask a quick question on that regard?
Of course. Sure.
And that is, when you would go up and ask for additional resources, would you do it by type of activity? Did you specifically remember during your tenure about whether Justice or FBI did ask for additional resources in this one area?
Yes and no in that order. That is, yes, as I recall it, my testimony before Congress did include discussion of particular areas. Can I now recall specifically whether it included mortgage fraud as a separate category? No, I can't.
All right, thank you.
Judge, when, as Attorney General, do you recall first being briefed on mortgage fraud as a major priority of the department?
I don't recall precisely when that was.
Okay. Do you think it was within the first several months?
Several being?
Well, you tell me. Do you have any recollection?
I took office in November.
Yes.
The activities I recall at the beginning involved getting up to speed on national security, which was an overriding problem, on reviewing the OLC letters relating to CIA interrogation practices, which I had undertaken to do in my testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee on confirmation, as well as being briefed on the entire range of activities, both civil and criminal, that confronted the Justice Department at some point within that period, and that period would include up to, say, January. I'm sure that a discussion of financial crimes, including mortgage fraud, came up, but I can't for the life of me tell you now that I recall a particular meeting, nor could I really discuss a particular meeting. I mean, I'm sure you don't want to get into matters of executive privilege, but the short of it is I can't recall a particular briefing devoted to that. I do know that I became aware of it.
Okay. And without getting into, and understanding that recollection of a specific meeting is a challenge at this later date, but what generally were you hearing at that time, at or about the beginning of 2008, about the extent of mortgage fraud and its potential economic repercussions?
Okay. I recall hearing about mortgage fraud as a phenomenon. I do not recall hearing about potential economic repercussions in the sense in which you're looking into it, namely its effect on the economy in the large.
What do you recall hearing?
Go ahead, Donna.
No, I'm sorry, Chairman, please.
I was just going to ask, well, putting aside the economic repercussions, what were you hearing about the extent, nature of mortgage fraud,
that it was a phenomenon that was occurring in various areas of the country and in various ways. The mortgage, when mortgage fraud isn't discovered until mortgages begin to fail, because it's, any fraud investigation is inherently a reactive thing. And so we were receiving reports of mortgage failures and of there being fraudulent activity in connection with flipping houses, overvaluation, and the like. That's what I first recall hearing about.
At the time, was it viewed as a critical problem, very extensive in certain jurisdictions? Because home prices had started to decline about mid, depending on the jurisdiction, but nationally they topped out in mid-2006 and were in pretty steep descent through 2006, well, mild and then pretty steep descent in late 2007 through your tenure as 2008. I guess I'm trying to get a sense kind of the severity with which this issue is viewed.
I don't recall a discussion of severity, qua severity.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
I don't recall a discussion of or a characterization of severity as a category.
Donna?
Okay. Judge, as promised, I wanted to alert you that Assistant Director Tom Krebs has just joined us.
Good morning, Judge. I apologize for being late.
Beg pardon?
I said, good morning, Judge. I apologize for being late.
No need to apologize.
Right. Brolin.
Okay.
So can I ask a question? What do you mean by this? You weren't aware of severity as a category. I'm sorry. I was a little...
The question was, did I recall... how severe did I recall the problem being characterized? And my response was that I didn't recall a characterization of severity.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Along similar lines, if you can generally characterize for us, were you hearing anything in particular about the extent of predatory lending and unfair and deceptive lending practices to consumers?
Don't recall hearing about that at the beginning.
Okay. Did you have any discussions regarding economic crimes and in particular mortgage fraud with former Attorney General Gonzalez during your transition period?
I had one conversation with Judge Gonzalez after my nomination was announced, and that was essentially a congratulatory telephone call from him to me, and that was the only discussion we had.
Okay. I'm going to move forward now to April of 2008. While you were serving as Attorney General, the FBI released its 2007 mortgage fraud statistics. That was a report which revealed a 47% increase in mortgage fraud investigations from 2006, as well as a 176% jump from 2002 to 2007. The report showed also a stark increase in the number of suspicious activity reports filed relating to mortgage fraud. And finally, the report specifically warned that the downward trend in the housing market created an ideal climate for even more increases in mortgage fraud. Do you recall the issuance of that report?
No.
Okay. Well, if you could take for granted that it was issued in April 2008, and following the issuance of that report, Assistant Director Kenneth Kaiser with the FBI's Criminal Investigative Division made additional public warnings that the numbers in the 2007 report that I just referred to were just the tip of the iceberg on mortgage fraud. So given all of that, at that point in or around April 2008, did the department or the FBI, in your view, have appropriate resources to effectively combat mortgage fraud? And I take your earlier remarks that there are never adequate resources, but at that point in April 2008, did you have any additional thoughts on the resources that were directed to mortgage fraud?
I don't recall having additional thoughts at that time, no.
Do you recall having thoughts anywhere in the early or spring 2008 period that were a result specifically of briefings that you had on an increase in mortgage fraud?
No.
Okay. In the spring 2008 period, or any time around about that period, were you aware of requests within the department or the Bureau for additional resources to be devoted to mortgage fraud?
Understand, we're working based on recollection here, right?
Absolutely.
I have a dim recollection of outside people commenting that additional resources should be devoted, and there being speculation about whether resources that were being devoted to national security investigations, and in particular to terrorism investigations, were somehow impeding fraud investigations, which I thought was a bogus issue.
Can you comment a little more on that?
I just did.
Okay, so succinct.
I thought it was a bogus issue.
Okay.
And bearing in mind that you are recognizing that there were some noise from the outside that perhaps a redirection of resources should be considered, were you aware of any requests internally in the department, the Bureau, not so much redirecting resources, but seeking additional resources for mortgage fraud?
No, I was not. Or not that I recall.
Okay. Were you hearing anything either from inside the Department of the Bureau or outside the Department of the Bureau that mortgage fraud should be addressed by a coordinated national response?
There was a coordinated national response. I recall a question at a press availability session as to whether I was going to announce the formation of a national task force. That I recall.
Okay.
The response was what I referred to before, there being, I think it was more than 40 regional groups within the FBI that one could describe as task forces that were working with federal, state, and local law enforcement on all manner of mortgage fraud investigations from, as I said, from the bottom of the pyramid to the top.
So can we explore that a little? I guess in 2008, Donna, you have the information, there's at least a public report, I think New York Times, that you had decided not to form a national mortgage fraud task force.
Right.
And so can you elaborate a little? I know you said something about 40 different task forces, why you made that decision, why you thought the best approach was not a singular national mortgage fraud task force.
Sure. Mortgage fraud is a label that is attached to a wide variety of activities, everything from the fraudulent loan application by someone who overvalues his property to the purchase by a straw purchaser and flipping the house on up to the regulator who doesn't, or rather the lending institution that doesn't pay close attention to the mortgage, to the company that packages up the mortgage as one of a group of securities and passes them along the chain, to the risk assessor who's supposed to assess the risk of a package of mortgages like this but doesn't really pay attention to doing it, to the person who markets it to the public and overvalues the value of the package. That is a phenomenon or a set of phenomena that was going on at a variety of levels in a variety of different places all over the country. It was not going on in a particular location. To contrast it for a minute with the Enron task force, which was presented to me as an example of a task force that was successful. The Enron task force focused on a particular company, a particular set of practices. It was large and it was diverse in geographic scope within a limited area. I mean, that is, it went on in a variety of different places, but it was still principally one company conducting one set of activities. And even there, The question of whether it was successful or not, I think, is very much an open one. Yes, there were convictions in that case. There were enormous resources devoted to that. And one of the casualties of that case was an accounting firm, Arthur Andersen and Company, that wound up being indicted and ruined, thousands of people thrown out of work. And by the time the case got up to the Supreme Court, lo and behold, there was no crime committed. So task forces are a dangerous tool.
Because to what they have a need to fulfill their stated mission?
In part.
Regardless of the actual...
But I would contrast even that success with the organized crime task forces back in the 60s and 70s, which were, candidly, a failure. They prosecuted a lot of low-level organized crime cases. But if you look at the major organized crime cases that were brought later on, they were brought in individual U.S. attorney's offices. Southern District of New York, Eastern District of New York, in Florida, in Boston, in Chicago. And those were very successful, and to the extent that that organized crime was inhibited and broken up to a certain extent, it was those kinds of prosecutions, rather than any sort of nationally directed task force, that did it. And when you're dealing with a widespread phenomenon, to have a group of people in Washington, chasing their tails and playing whack-a-mole with it all over the country, I think is not the best way to do it.
Can I insert one more question in there?
Absolutely. Of course.
And that is, recently we had a hearing in Sacramento. The U.S. Attorney Ben Wagner, who had served in the office for some time prior to his nomination to be U.S. Attorney by President Obama, he had been in the U.S. Attorney's office, I think, I'm going to say at least for a decade. He certainly was there during your tenure. One of the things that, in response to questioning in Sacramento, we had asked about prosecutions essentially at the corporate level versus just mortgage broker borrower, some of the things you referred to, which was...
being securitization or...?
Well, yeah, basically either directed activities by the lender or whatever fraud or other violations may have been happening at the securitization level. I mean, his response was, well, because of my local jurisdiction, without corporate headquarters here, that wasn't within my jurisdiction. So I guess I just wanted to ask you, you would then, I guess your response would be, you would look to the U.S. attorneys where the corporate headquarters were to prosecute those cases?
Yeah, if a U.S. attorney in Sacramento finds what he thinks is unlawful conduct being conducted by an entity that's based somewhere else. In the first place, if it's being conducted in his district, I have news for him. He does have jurisdiction. But if he feels that he doesn't...
And I'm not an attorney, so I don't... I hope I didn't mean to mischaracterize what he might have said, but I think
believe
the answer
me,
was that's not why this jurisdiction had focused on those. But go ahead.
No, I understand. To a certain extent, it's an advantage not to be an attorney. You don't think in boxes. But there is jurisdiction to prosecute locally things that may originate someplace else. But even if he felt he didn't have jurisdiction, then whatever investigative agency he was working with, which would probably have been the Bureau, although not necessarily, could have been the Postal Service or HUD. In any event, could have reported up the chain and essentially referred the case to a U.S. attorney's office where the company was headquartered.
Or the main justice.
Or main justice. I tend to think about U.S. attorney's offices rather than main justice, notwithstanding that I served it.
All right.
The short of it is, yes, it could have been done, or perhaps referred back to D.C. I wouldn't necessarily suggest that investigation would then proceed from D.C.
Donna, back to you.
Okay. Just following up on what you said about the potential advantages and disadvantages of national task forces, given the benefit of hindsight, do you think any more national coordinated response would have led to increased and useful information sharing across regions as to what they were seeing and how they were responding?
In the abstract, I can't imagine that with the benefit of hindsight you can possibly do something that you did before better than you did. There's nothing that I've ever done, including things that were successful, where they couldn't have been done better. But there is no particular, there was no particular smokestacking of information or anything of that kind that I would point to as an impediment to information sharing. In fact, that was the point of the regional task forces, which were to share information, send the information back to headquarters so that others could use it as well.
Okay. I'm going to go back to resources for one moment. Last year, FBI Deputy Director John Pistole testified before Congress that...
Just as a matter of usage, I think he pronounces it Pistole.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
if you ever talk to him, I wouldn't say he's sensitive about that because it's not his business to be sensitive, but if you call him Pistol, he'll respond better.
I promise you I'll remember that. And thank you. Deputy Director Pistol testified before Congress that the Bureau had some 1,000 agents working on the SNL crisis at its height, compared to about 240 agents working on mortgage fraud cases in 2009. And you testified a bit about resources, but just given that statistic, were you aware when you were Attorney General of the disparity of resources addressing the current crisis and the SNL crisis?
In those terms, no. The SNL crisis occurred when?
80s, early 90s.
Right. Specifically, it occurred before September 11, 2001.
Yes. Much before.
A lot happened after September 11, 2001. And the FBI was transformed into essentially a different kind of agency. It took on a mandate that it had never had before, which was becoming a member of the intelligence community and not only investigating crime but preventing it and gathering intelligence for use by the Bureau but also by other intelligence agencies. That was and remains a colossal effort.
But can I pick up a little on that? Earlier you
sure.
said you thought that the allegations or the comments that resources have been drained away from terrorism, therefore affecting white-collar criminal investigations were bogus. But
correct.
But didn't you just in effect say there that since the FBI had been transformed, there was a change in the focus and mission of the FBI?
There was a change in the focus and mission of the FBI. That's not the same as saying that resources were drained away from one activity to put on another. You allocate the resources that you have. I mean, we started with this early in the conversation. You allocate the resources that you have, the resources that you think you can reasonably get, over the responsibilities that you have. And to suggest that there's a misallocation of resources because you're devoting more of what you had before to a different kind of activity, I think is wrong. It was not.
It may be a conscious policy decision, but if you have finite resources, it could leave certain activities short. If in fact you picked up a big new mission like terrorism,
yes it could. It could, but then the question becomes, what do you mean by short? I mean the resources devoted to the SNL crisis didn't prevent the SNL crisis.
No, but it did result in, I think, about 1,000 priority felony convictions in SNLs themselves.
Right, and we've had numerous felony convictions in connection with mortgage fraud. And we're going to have many more.
All right, Donna, back to you.
The number of convictions or the number of cases is not necessarily in connection with different phenomena. Is not necessarily a measure of the success with which each one was met.
Judge, small question about priorities. In light of the fact that, like you said, after 9/11, the FBI was transformed from a traditional criminal investigating agency to, like you said, a member of the intelligence community and working counterterrorism, counterintelligence as, I believe, the number one and number two priorities, respectively. Looking back on it, do you think that the FBI can maintain that dual role as the primary counterintelligence agency with the United States and its criminal mandate, or should it be divested of some of its more traditional roles?
I'm against divestment. I mean, if you're talking about should we create MI5?
No, sir. Well, given the fact that there are other agencies that have similar investigative mandates to the FBI in different areas, not just financial crimes, but violent crime, gangs, things like that, that's kind of what I was getting at.
Which other agencies?
HUD OIG, IRS.
They're not investigating. I mean, if they're investigating violent crime, the number of IRS investigations of violent crime, I think I could count on the fingers of one hand.
Well, with regard to white collar crime, especially mortgage fraud, HUD OIG, IRS, Secret Service.
Would I favor transferring the FBI's jurisdiction over those crimes to those other agencies?
Yes, no. Sir.
No, I would not.
Can you comment on as reasons for that?
Sure. Those other agencies have mandates that run way beyond law enforcement. Law enforcement is one of many things that they do. Law enforcement is the only thing that the FBI does. It has the ability to attract the kind of talent, not only, we're not talking about door kickers here, we're talking about accountants, we're talking about other people who are able to investigate financial crimes, and the Bureau's been attracting more and more of those people. To shrink their mandate under those circumstances, I think, would be a big mistake.
Thank you.
During your tenure as Attorney General, do you think there were any investigative techniques or authorities that you believe the Department and or the Bureau were lacking to effectively do their job vis-a-vis mortgage fraud?
Techniques? Not that I'm aware of.
Well, or authorities. You certainly have
No, I mean, you have, look, the grand jury has subpoena power. They have the power to obtain wiretaps. Working with the Postal Service, they have the authority to obtain mail covers. Those are the conventional investigative tools. Use of undercover agents and the like. Also, obviously, examination of records. Those tools were available.
Okay. I'm going to turn now to interagency cooperation. While you were Attorney General, regarding the prosecution of mortgage-related fraud, do you believe there was optimal cooperation between the staffs of DOJ and the Bureau and the OTS, the Federal Reserve, Treasury, and the SEC, and you can break those down in any way that makes sense.
Okay. I'm not specifically aware of all of the interactions with all of those agencies, and was not at the time. Was there optimal cooperation? There is never, underline never, optimal cooperation. That much I can tell you based on what I saw in D.C. That said, there was plenty of cooperation, and I was involved specifically in some cooperation that I can't, for reasons of privilege, get into with Treasury. So I know that there was agency cooperation, and that everybody had the mandate to fight the problem, not the other agencies. But there's never optimal cooperation as long as there are different initials on the different agencies, as I'm sure you know from your own experience.
Can you speak to any particular instances or general types of cooperation that were suboptimal during that time?
I cannot. And truthfully, I can't. Okay. I really can't.
The FCIC has received testimony suggesting that during the savings and loan crisis, the banking regulators, OCC, OTS, and the Federal Reserve, worked closely with federal law enforcement, and they often assisted them in getting toward prosecution. The testimony also suggested that a critical difference between the savings and loan crisis and the current crisis is that the cooperation between federal regulators that was available in the savings and loan crisis didn't occur as robustly during the current crisis. Do you have a view, given that we have heard that, do you have a view on that?
I don't. I haven't heard it. I mean, the only explanation other than cussedness that I can think of that would explain it is the differing nature of the two instances. The S&L crisis involved a particular set of institutions, savings and loan institutions, so that the regulators in that area could cooperate on an ongoing basis with. I mean, you'd have the same regulators cooperating with the same people, whereas here you're talking about a very diverse group of entities that were involved in this, and so the cooperation is somewhat more more complex and therefore more difficult. But that's the only possible explanation that I can offer. But
can I pick up a little on this?
Sure.
One of the in the S&L crisis, apparently, according to testimony. The regulators were very active in essentially acting as quote-unquote Sherpas for law enforcement, referring cases, guiding law enforcement, and I think one of the things we're trying to get a handle on is the extent to which, in this instance, in the run-up to the crisis and during, and this is probably beyond, this is beyond just strict mortgage fraud, it may be other potentially criminal activities, and in fact it may fit that larger definition of mortgage fraud that you described, which was not just borrowers, mortgage brokers, but all the way up the chain. In our examination of the Federal Reserve, one of the things we had focused on was they had not adopted regulations to constrain unfair and deceptive lending. They had adopted some in 2001, but they turned out not to be very effective. They affected very little of the practices. But the Federal Reserve said that the real course of action when you identify unfair and deceptive lending is to refer it, make the referral to law enforcement. And particularly Mr. Greenspan made that point. When we look back at the records from 2000 to 2006, which was of course prior to your tenure, it turned out that the Federal Reserve had only referred two institutions in that 6 years for unfair and deceptive lending, even though there were a tremendous number of complaints by consumer groups across the country, and they were two very small institutions, one, I believe, in Palm Desert, California, and one in Centerville, Illinois. I guess specifically what I want to ask is, do you have any recollection of regulators coming to you at the Department of Justice and referring cases during your tenure, or actively trying to get the department to move on cases of potential financial crimes?
No, I would not have such a recollection, because they wouldn't be coming to me.
They might not come to you, but you might have an awareness within your organization to the extent that those issues were being raised and in a significant way.
I don't.
Okay. So you don't, and I won't take it as any more than a not a recollection, but you don't have a recollection of activity, at least of which you are aware of regulators coming to you, referring cases, bringing cases actively.
Not specifically, no.
Okay.
Nor would I. But
all right, Donna, back to you.
Okay. Following up on the cooperation, branching out a little bit regarding the prosecution specifically of mortgage-related fraud, do you believe there was optimal cooperation between the staffs of DOJ and the Bureau and state law enforcement agencies? And bearing in mind your earlier comments about optimal...
My earlier comments hold true. I mean, the fact is, I think that there was a good deal of cooperation, particularly with state and locals, and my guess is you'd find it to have... You'd find it pretty substantial and robust. Was it optimal? No. Can't. Because you could always look back and say that something could have been done differently.
In hindsight, do you think, given, again, the scarcity of resources and the number of mandates that the department has. Do you think that the department and the Bureau in the current financial crisis utilized their state law enforcement counterparts enough? Or could they have referred more matters out to more effectively leverage their own limited resources by relying more upon state law enforcement?
I'm not sufficiently aware of the nature of the cases that were referred as opposed to the ones that were simply there and not referred to be able to say one way or the other.
A number of commentators have been critical of the relatively fewer criminal prosecutions of high-level executives coming out of the current financial crisis compared to the number of high-profile prosecutions coming out of the savings and loan crisis. Do you have a view on that?
Not really. I mean, there is often a call for the rolling of heads and to have people hanging from a lamppost. I understand that. But those cases are difficult to prove and complex. I think the SNL crisis, partly because of the nature of the frauds committed, was less difficult to prove. These cases are a lot more difficult.
In what respect?
Because
you were early on, I think, were very, I thought your comments early on were very interesting, that you recognized that fraud with some people confined to the, kind of direct act at the ground level, in fact, was an action that could permeate all the way through the system.
It permeated all the way through the system in different ways. There were different frauds committed at different levels. And the frauds at the top level involved valuation of very complex instruments that are very difficult to prove. Witness the fact that one case where there was actually a tape recording of people discussing the possibility that they were overvaluing securities that they were selling in the Eastern District of New York resulted in an acquittal.
This was the BSAM case, the Bear Stearns Asset Management.
Yes, exactly.
Case. Okay.
Right.
Donna, back to you. Still. I'm gonna hold the rest of my questions to the end, Donna.
And which will be very soon. two questions to round out the discussion, and they're very broad. I know you've spoken on these points, but just to put some punctuation on this, while you were Attorney General, was the pending financial crisis a major priority for the department?
The pending financial crisis as a financial crisis was a priority only insofar as it manifested itself in activity that was within the jurisdiction of the department. I mean, understand, we were not Treasury. We were not the Fed. We were not a whole lot of other people.
Well, with that clarification, then, let me go to my second question, which is, how big a role do you think mortgage fraud played in the current financial crisis?
That is above my pay grade.
Fair enough. Then to complete the syllogism, in hindsight, was mortgage fraud a major priority during your tenure as Attorney General?
It was a priority. I mean, there were, during my tenure as AG, there were, I believe I referred in various public pronouncements, and you can dig this out, to a number of major priorities. One of them was terrorism. That was number one. Gang-related activity, and we're talking here about international gangs and gangs that are national in scope, was another. Civil rights enforcement, in particular the upcoming election, was a third, and the Southwest border was another. Involving immigration problems along the Southwest border. Those were the four major priorities during my tenure.
I certainly appreciate this opportunity, Judge.
I'm sorry, I might leap down. Could you repeat number three and four quickly for me? I apologize. Somehow I...
One was civil rights law. I mean, I don't know whether it was number three or number two, but civil rights law.
Terrorism, international gangs,
in particular,
civil
with the
upcoming,
and immigration. You know, international gangs and transnational crime was another. And the Southwest border was another.
Judge, I want to thank you. I'm going to turn this back over to the chairman, who I think has.
Let me ask you. Do Mr. Krebs and Mr. Wall have questions before I wrap up with my questions?
We had discussed those with the other members of the staff before we got in the room, Mr. Chairman, and they have all been asked.
All right. So let me just ask a couple in closing up here. Judge McCasey, I've been given to believe by some conversations with some assistant U.S. attorneys that the U.S. attorneys, as I would expect, had raised the issue of mortgage fraud and severity with you. Do you remember any discussions directly with U.S. attorneys on this subject and the nature of them?
No.
So you don't remember being approached by any U.S. attorneys on this subject saying it's severe, it's a very significant issue that requires significant action and resources?
I mean, somebody approaching me and saying, I mean, by what, by way of complaint that there weren't enough resources?
They were talking to you about the issue and the severity of it from U.S. attorneys.
There may very well have been such conversations. So as I sit here now, do I recall one? No.
I think you answered the question about where you saw it in the priority scheme. Ms. Norman had asked you a series of questions about the 2008 mortgage fraud statistics report, which I think you said you had not been aware of. But again, just one larger question. Looking back on 2008, were there any major specific steps you took in this arena? You recall right now major initiatives that were undertaken?
There was the ongoing effort by within the Bureau that I referred to before. There was these more than 40 task forces, if you will, regional task forces, if you want to call them that, was an ongoing effort throughout 2008.
Now, was that operation. Those 40 were focused on mortgage fraud, or those are regional task forces covering a broad variety of issues?
No, they were those were focused on mortgage fraud.
Okay.
Operation Malicious Mortgage was essentially a harvesting of cases from a variety of districts. There were over, as I recall it, over 400 defendants. In several different jurisdictions, that was designed to put pressure on and focus on the problem. That was one of the initiatives. It was a gathering of cases based on efforts that had been going on before.
Right, and then I think my final question really does return to this issue of prosecutions at the corporate level. I mean, it has been striking as we've looked at our work to see the paucity of prosecutions at that level. Do you remember during your tenure whether there were significant investigations launched into practices at financial institutions themselves at the executive level, in particular any investigations launched with respect to significantly sized non-prime lenders?
Countrywide. I mean, well, there was of course countrywide, and the Bear Stearns prosecution that we mentioned before. Was I aware of particular other investigations? No, nor
particular investigations or the kind of extent of investigatory activity in that regard.
No, I mean it. Now, as I sit here, I can't recall that specific category.
But nothing on in the order of, you had said, of course, it predated you, but nothing on the order of, for example, a focus on an Enron or a WorldCom in that, of that nature?
No, because there was no, Enron or WorldCom in the set of problems and issues that we've been referring to as mortgage fraud. This was going on across the board, across a wide variety.
Right, so I'm actually now talking about beyond mortgage fraud. I'm talking about financial crimes. So, for example, by early, by early 07, almost every major non-bank subprime mortgage lender had either folded up shop, gone bankrupt. Were there any significant investigations into the practices of those institutions as an example?
There were investigations of Washington Mutual, of IndyMac, of any one of a host of other of institutions at which improprieties were alleged, and it went under.
I think I've asked all my questions. Staff, do you have any more at this point? Donna, do you want to wrap us up?
Sure. I guess the only final question that we would like to ask you is that which we ask everyone, which is there anything additionally that you think it would be useful to tell us that would help us do our work that we have not asked
you? I don't. to the extent that I understand your work, which is to identify the causes of a huge phenomenon, all I can do is wish you luck and tell you that most of it is beyond my range. I mean, if we're talking about law enforcement, that can't be a major part of this. But that's your call, not mine.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time, and I'm going to turn the tape recorder off here at approximately.